So when we view objects in the real world, the stimulus divergence, so the gaze angle of our eyes, and the stimulus to accommodation, which is where our eyes are driven to focus to maintain a sharp retinal image, originate from the same object distance. So they originate from the same point in space. Now, when we try to simulate this world virtually on a conventional three-dimensional display, we can get the vergent stimulus absolutely correct, so we can generate the correct views for the left and the right eyes. But because the display surface is at a fixed optical distance, the stimulus to accommodation also remains fixed at the distance of the screen. So we could have a vergent stimulus at this object point here, but the observer will be driven or forced to accommodate at the surface of the display. And this creates a conflict. This is what creates the conflict between the stimulus divergence and the stimulus to accommodation. So this is a problem for observers because the control, neural control of vergence and accommodation aren't independent. So changes in the convergent state drive changes in accommodation, and changes in accommodation drive changes in convergence. And this is a problem because it's hard to decouple these systems. So the forced decoupling of your vergence and accommodation responses requires effort upon users, and that effort has been shown to lead to visual discomfort and fatigue. And it also leads to decrease in stereoscopic performance. So it takes longer to fuse a stereoscopically presented stimulus, and it's been shown to reduce overall stereo acuity. So if we could construct a display that corrects this problem, we could alleviate some of the fatigue symptoms that are reported by observers. So one class of displays that does correct this are so-called multiple focal plane displays. And these types of displays project light from on discrete image planes at different optical distances. So in the limit that we have a million image planes, we'd be able to represent the real world. Okay, you can project light from the exact correct optical distance, focal distance, and vergence distance. But obviously, having a million image planes is quite a difficult solution. But we can take advantage of the fact that the eye has a fairly large depth of focus. It's about 0.3 diopters. So we don't need a high focal depth resolution. Okay, so if we take advantage of the focal depth or the depth of focus of the eye, we can reduce the overall number of image planes by just placing image planes within that depth of focus. And if we do this and we want a display that has, say, a 3-dioptric range, which would be viewing distances from about 30 centimeters out to optical infinity, we'd need approximately 11 or 12 image planes, which is still a fairly difficult solution engineering-wise. So several of us have been examining whether we can get away with spacing image planes further apart outside the depth of focus of the eye and still present a continuous stimulus to accommodation. So in doing this, we have to derive a decision rule, basically. Where do we assign luminance contrast for object points that are not coincident with the location of an image plane? So this point here, we have to decide whether to draw image data on this image plane or on this image plane. So one simple solution would be something we can refer to as a box filter, where we simply assign image contrast on the image plane that the object point is closest to. So for example, this slanted plane that's slanting between two image planes. Well, the points of the object that are closest to this image plane here, we can just assign luminance contrast there. And for portions of the object that are closer to this image plane, we just assign luminance contrast there. It's a fairly easy solution. Unfortunately, though, it leads to a visible artifact or contrast discontinuity in the image that results from the one of the image planes always being defocused. So Kurt Akerley suggested, instead of using this box filter, that you use a depth filtering algorithm that weights luminance contrast according to how far the object is between the image planes along lines of sight. So you can see for the same object that we're trying to simulate, as the object points get nearer to this image plane, more luminance contrast is assigned to this plane. And as it slants away, more and more luminance contrast is assigned to the far image plane. What turns out, if we do this, the stimulus to accommodation, or this allows us to move the stimulus to accommodation in an analog fashion between image planes. So David Hoffman has done a substantial amount of modeling of the retinal image that originates from depth-filtered stimuli. I'm showing the results of some of his modeling here. So what the accommodation system is trying to do is maximize image contrast. So if we find the point, the accommodative distance that maximizes image contrast for stimuli that are distributed between image planes for different focal distances, we can see that there's a linear, pretty much a predicted linear response, at least for lower spatial frequencies, for simulated distances between image planes separated by 6/9 of a diopter. You can see if we separate image planes up to about 10/9 of a diopter, we see a fairly linear response for low spatial frequency content, so 2 and 4 cycles per degree, but the higher spatial frequency content in the image starts to show a bias where the position of maximum contrast is at one or the other image plane. So if an individual is driven to accommodate based on high spatial frequency information in the retinal image, separations of up to 10/9 of a diopter likely won't work. However, we've found that mid-range spatial frequencies are preferentially used by the accommodation system. And we tested this by presenting different depth blend ratios to observers for different spatial frequencies presented monocularly. And you can see here, for image planes separated up to about just over 1 diopter, we obtain a fairly linear and accurate accommodation response for different simulated distances. So we know that we can move the stimulus and therefore the accommodation response kind of in an analog fashion between image planes for monocular stimuli. And the important question for us in 3D displays is whether or not we can do the same thing for binocularly presented stimuli. And you may think because there's an extra estimate to the object's distance given by vergence, the accommodation response would be as accurate or possibly more accurate. However, it's not quite as simple as that. So using the largest plane separation condition that worked monocularly, we presented data here last year that showed that the accommodation response breaks down when we add a binocular signal. So this is a comparison of a depth-filtered stimulus shown in blue versus the real stimulus shown in red for a step change in optical distance. And what you can see is that there's this fairly large overshoot in accommodation, and the response isn't as accurate for the same plane spacing that worked monocularly. So the question of how many planes do we need, or how far apart do we need to separate image planes for a tractable multiple focal plane display is still an open question. To test this question, we've built a multiple focal plane display in Bangor. And I'll just, for the next few slides, kind of illustrate how it works. So we have a large field, a large 30-inch Samsung monitor mounted over a series of mirrors and beam splitters. So you can see here, if I draw on this portion of the monitor, the light is reflected off this first surface mirror, and it follows a fairly long path length. So the accommodation stimulus is quite far. If we draw on this portion of the monitor, the path length's a bit shorter, so the stimulus to accommodation is slightly nearer. And again, if we draw on this portion of the monitor, the path length's even shorter. Now, we've built this in a binocular arrangement. So we have a separate display for the left and the right eye. Okay, and each eye has we can draw data to up to 3 different discrete focal distances. Conceptually, this display is the same as other ones in the literature, such as the Fake Space Boom, or Kurt Akeley's device at Berkeley, which both use static optics, similar to ours. And then 2 other ones, Liu and Gordon Loves, they use time-interlaced switchable lenses to be able to project image data at different focal distances. But conceptually, all of these displays are the same in terms of what they're trying to accomplish, which is drawing image data at discrete focal distances simultaneously. So here's a picture of our device. So you can see an observer mounted at the display. So it's we refer to it as a head-mounted display because we mount the head on the display. And then we measure accommodation using this device to the Grand Seiko autorefractor, which we sample at 30 hertz. And you might be able to see here, we use the iLink 2 system to monitor Virgin's eye movements. Okay, on the right photo, you can see a side view of our bright eyes display. So here's the monitor over top of our series of mirrors and beam splitters. Now, we've mounted our image planes on this optical rail, which allows us to move image planes into any arrangement we like, depending on the experiment that we're running. So for this experiment, what we did was induced a step change in optical distance of a target, which was a spatially broadband Maltese cross. So we had a fixation target that started at the far image plane. We also had targets that started at the near image plane and had individuals make divergent eye movements. I'm just showing inwards convergent eye movements to show you the method. So we induced this, we had the stimulus undergo a step change in optical distance. And this target could be drawn either on a real image plane or with image planes that were located so we could simulate that object distance, okay, using depth filtering. And they were separated either by 0.6, 0.9, or 1.2 diopters. So we had targets. The targets were located at 0.4, 0.7, or 1 diopter. And this shows you the location of the target image planes for the real world targets. For planes that were separated by 0.6, the target positions are in the same location. And you can see where we arranged image planes and the depth filtering ratios used to simulate that focal distance. And for 0.9 and 1.2 diopter separation conditions. So for this experiment, what we're interested in is where does the eye end up? Okay, so we're interested in what the steady state response for vergence and accommodation was. So here I'm showing you across time the average vergence and accommodation traces for one observer over 15 trials. So you can see this was for a target that jumped from 0.1 diopter up to 1.0 diopters. And what we've done to extract an estimate of where the eye ended up is we computed the steady state response by averaging these traces from 3 seconds to the end of the trial, which was 6 seconds. Okay, so here's the vergence responses. So what I'm showing you is what was the average response for our four observers as a function of where the target was. Okay, the blue lines are showing what their responses were for depth filtered targets, and the red lines are showing what the real target responses were. As you can see, there's the responses for both types of stimuli are virtually identical, which is quite reassuring because it indicates to us that the vergent stimuli are correct and not disrupted using depth filtering. And here I'm showing you the accommodation responses for the same target position, so the axes here are the same. What you can see is as we increase the plane separation, the responses for the blended stimuli, or the depth filter stimuli in blue, start to deviate further from the real world conditions, especially at the near object or at the near target position. Okay. And what we want to do is examine how close are these responses to the real world. Sorry, how close are the depth filter responses to the real world? So to do that, we've computed, we've extracted the slopes through each of these functions. And I'm plotting them here. So what I'm showing you here is the slope of the responses as a function of image plane separation, okay, for vergence and accommodation. The red bar, or sorry, the red line and bar indicates what the slope for the real object conditions were, plus and minus a standard error. As you can see, there's no the responses for the vergence stimuli, or vergence responses are virtually identical to the real world stimuli. However, In accommodation, the responses for a small plane separation, about 0.6 diopters, is fairly close to the real world. And as we increase plane separation, it starts to deviate, or the accuracy of the vergence response gets worse. And if we look at the compare what the responses are for the far versus near targets, sorry, if we compare what the responses are for the depth filtered versus the real targets are across the plane, across the different positions, we can see that this inaccuracy or this deviation from the real world is occurring at the near target location. Okay. And as you can see, as we increase plane separation, okay, the accuracy of the responses gets worse. So if you recall, we were able to get accurate and linear and accurate accommodation responses from monocularly driven accommodation for plane separations up to about 10/9 of a diopter, so just over one diopter. The bad news for these types of displays for binocularly presented stimuli is that you need a narrower plane separation. It doesn't work as well with a binocular signal, likely due to the nonlinear interactions or coupling between vergence and accommodation. The good news is that the plane separations at work, which are about 0.6 diopters or slightly above, still allow for a fairly tractable solution. So for our 3-diopter range display, we'd need approximately 4 to 6 image planes, which is a possibly a fairly straightforward solution. So these types of displays, when we use depth filtering, allows us to have a precise and accurate stimulus to accommodation, which should help alleviate these fatigue symptoms that result from the vergence accommodation conflict. Thank you very much.
Okay, any questions?
I'm always asking a question. Cool, that's neat. But let's go back to the slide where you showed the gains, the histogram slide. Yeah.
Okay, yep.
Well, a completely accurate response would have a slope of 1. What you're saying is that with a real stimulus, the subject was accommodating inaccurately. They had a slope of 0.7.
Yes.
So one could argue that actually it made them more correct than they are in the real world.
The important comparison, though, is what do they do to stimuli, real-world stimuli, at the exact same target location. So in practice, when you're computing or when you're extracting slope responses and accommodation, you usually get gains of about 0.7 to 0.8.
That's one perspective,
but it deviates away from what real-world responses are. And I think, I mean, the contrast in these displays is optimal for plane separations of 0. So that would give you the best accommodation response.
But from another perspective, the goal of accommodation is to maximize image contrast, and by pulling closer to the so-called demand line, actually done better than they did in the real world. I mean, from another perspective.
Yep.
Any other questions? Okay. One question. Did you measure the perceived discomfort or blurriness, whatever indication, to correlate the range of depths you tested in relation to perceived visual discomfort?
Yeah, in this experiment, we didn't measure discomfort. I ask subjects at the conclusion of sessions to subjectively report what they experience. No one experienced significant discomfort while doing this. In terms of the perceived blur, it's hard to judge because all of the stimuli presentations were interleaved. And I didn't ask them what their perceived contrast or blur was on each stimulus.
You've almost designed a volumetric display. Did you think of using it that way for testing?
Pardon me?
You've almost designed a volumetric display.
I'd argue that this is a volumetric display.
You have two separate channels, a left and a right channel.
Yes.
In a true volumetric display, you'd have a single channel. The eyes would be looking at the effigies in a single domain. Do you think that would change the result?
Well, the type of volumetric display that you're talking about, you have light that's projected from a specific optical distance, whereas this, it's a simulated optical distance. So I don't think the results would be that different, to be honest.
Okay, we are almost running out of time, so thank you very much.
Thank you.